welcome back to Out the Gate, the podcast about sailing and adventure on and around San Francisco Bay. I am your host, Ben Shaw, and today I'm having a conversation with John Bilger, the director and founder of Predict Wind. John founded the company after working on forecasting for the Alinghi America's Cup team, and the technology has really revolutionized accessibility of weather forecasting and weather routing for both racers and cruisers like myself. And in full disclosure, I've been using the tool all the way down the Pacific coast of the Americas with great success. The PredictWind team has been innovating extremely rapidly over the past few years, and there are all kinds of new tools to talk about. I talked to John about his own sailing background, how he developed PredictWind, some new exciting tools like, and this is really interesting for Bay Area listeners, 100-meter accuracy tidal current modeling for San Francisco Bay. We talk about that and more, so let's get to it.
My name's John Bilger, founding director of Predict Wind. Very fortunate to lead a great team of people here at Predict Wind. We started the company 13 years ago, and it's grown quite rapidly. We have about 50 people involved in the company now. And my background is sailing. I'm a sailor, so I've grown up sailing all my life. I'm a son of an ex-Olympian, and so from 8 years old, started sailing Optimist and representing New Zealand in the 470 class. And so it's just cool to be doing something you're passionate about.
You're in Auckland, and I assume that's where headquarters are for Predict Wind?
Yes, Auckland, New Zealand. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I am so excited to talk to you, John, because I've known about Predict Wind for a long, long time, and people have talked about it. I've heard many other cruisers, Matt Rutherford, who I know was using an early version of it when he was doing some of his more extreme sailing, but I just jumped in for real for the first time. And I've used the free version for years, but I just became a subscriber. And this is just kind of coincidence that we're talking now, but I am pretty enamored with the tool right now, the possibilities so we'll jump into that. But before we do, I want to hear a little more about your sailing background. What's your earliest memory of sailing? I mean, it must be pretty young your family was into it as well.
Basically, I just followed my father around, sailing all around the world. He did three Olympics, so he was a bit of a legend here in New Zealand. I always remember overhearing him talking to his crew once in the living room. I was in the kitchen, and he's saying, "Oh," his crew said to him, "You know, when's John going to get into sailing?" He says, "Ah, oh," you know, sort of just an offhand thing. "Oh, he's too young, you know." And he doesn't have enough money for a boat. So the next day I came up to him and says, "Dad, I've got $300 saved in the bank, and can you build me a boat?" He built me a boat, and it's my first, it was an Optimist. Oh. Yeah, so it sort of started from there. I actually learned to sailing with my mother, actually. We used to go sailing after school. Yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of adventures, a few mishaps. But
is sailing what brought your folks together, or was it coincidence that they both sailed?
Actually, my mother learned to sail from my father. Well, I wouldn't say learned in the right ways, just basically pushed off the beach in a laser and a strong 20-knot offshore wind and capsized and a few dramas later. But yeah, no, she's sort of learned to sail since they got married. Yeah, it's quite fun doing something together like that. You know, it's, these days, I don't think people tend to build their boats. They just buy them. Yeah. And that sort of art's being lost. People have less time, I think.
Is that something did you build it with your dad? Was it something you did together?
Dad built the boat. I helped out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, remember painting the boat together. It was called R2-D2 because I was a big Star Wars fan back then.
Awesome.
And pretty cool to sort of sail a boat that you built together with your dad.
It's a special way to bond. My father was not a racing sailor, but he was sailing all over the world in the 60s. And then I grew up. I mean, my fondest memories are doing boat projects with them, you know, fixing things, working on things on the boat. And now the boat that I'm sailing was his boat with my mom. And
wow.
We still work on it together, which is amazing.
Wow. That's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great.
So you just took right to it. Or was there any time in your life where you said, well, maybe I will do something else? Or was it sailing all the way?
No, sailing all the way. I mean, I did a few other sports growing up, you know, played rugby and a few other things, but, you know, running and things like that. But no, sailing was the passion. Probably quite a pivotal time when I won my first regatta here in New Zealand, national championship, I think, in the Optimist. And, you know, once you get the your competitive drive, you know, you won a few things, it certainly helps the passion, that's for sure.
You graduated with a mechanical engineering degree, right?
Correct, yeah.
You were working on the Alinghi America's Cup team.
Yes.
What were you doing for the team?
So my role is managing the weather team for them. Yeah, I mean, they really took a big punt with me because I had no background in weather at all. I basically just had an engineering degree, you know, competitive sailor. And so they, you know, put me in charge of that. And I really had to find a great team to be around me to make me look good. And so, yeah, we basically scoured the world for what we thought was the best technology and came across this weather modeling technology from Australia, all places, and worked with Jack Catsby, who's the head of the modeling division there at CSIRO in Australia, which is a government organization. Yeah, worked with Jack for 10 years. We did, you know, three America's Cup campaigns together. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, it's quite a high-pressure job because, you know, you really had to make the call of, you know, the sailors can only see like a mile and a half up the course, and the course is 3 miles long, and, you know, it took 25 minutes to get the top mark. Which is the favoured side? What is your confidence in that? Or what sort of gain do you think you're going to make by going left or right? And that was the genesis of starting up Predict Win, because a lot of the sailors would travel around the world and they would, you know, do these regattas around the world, and they'd say, hey, you reckon you could spin the model up for this location and this location and this location? So away we went. Yeah, we basically, you know, that was the idea for it.
When did the idea go from helping out people who asked on a one-off basis to you saying, huh, we could probably turn this into a business and open it up to the public?
Yeah, initially we wanted to, I was thinking that this would be something we could do with the Alinghi team and maybe a partnership with Ernesto Bertarelli, but, you know, he was sort of, you know, you do one or the other. And then the 2010 campaign had the option in my contract to start up the business. We kind of did it all the wrong way. You know, normally you get investors in and you assemble quite a significant team and build it at a rapid pace. We just had one developer and, you know, one sort of marketing graphics person, and we just grew organically. So it's quite a miracle that we're still here today, because, you know, 3 years into it, it was looking pretty shaky. We didn't have a whole lot of customers and the revenue was not that great, and we're spending a huge amount of money on development. So we're going backwards hundreds of thousands of dollars per year. And it was a pivotal moment with a friend of mine, and we're discussing it, and, you know, I said, do you think we should pull the pin? And he said, no, I think you should keep going. But it's your call, it's your money. Fortunately, we persevered and kept on going, but and so here we are today. But yeah, a lot of bit of gray hair, put it that way.
Well, have you always been somebody who just jumps in and says, yeah, I can do that, and then kind of figures it out? I mean, you said you didn't have weather experience when you joined Alinghi, and then it sounds like you didn't have a whole lot of business experience jumping into this, but you're like, I can figure it out.
Yeah, I think I'm a natural born risk taker, and, you know, a little bit entrepreneurial streak. So yeah, but I've just been very blessed to have the right people around me, really. I mean, that's the thing, is it's, I think I have a gift of being able to get people to work together and sort of solve problems and whatnot. But I mean, it's really the team around you that makes the product, and we've just been fortunate to hire the right people that are passionate about sailing or passionate about writing good code. And it's really cool now to have a great team, because back in the early days, it was just painfully slow to get features out. But now we've actually got a great team. Probably done more in the last year than we have done in the last 3 years, I think, in terms of development. So it's amazing.
How old is the company now? When did it officially start?
Yes, so it's 13 years old. So yeah, it's around 2010 started.
Yeah, you mentioned
that. Went to market.
And what was reception like at the beginning? I mean, I know now there's really not a whole lot like it out there. Was it convincing people to use it, or were people clamoring for it right from the get-go? What was it like?
We're very sort of fortunate that in the early days we sort of traded a little bit off the America's Cup Association. So, and we ran the business, the whole model, for free for 6 months, and we advertised quite lightly in yachting publications, online publications, and so we had huge sign-up rates. You know, like, you know, we get like
I think like 10,000 people over a weekend, you know, would sign up for this thing because of the, you know, the buzz we had from the America's Cup. But, you know, we soon learned when we turned the billing on after 6 months that, you know, getting free users is pretty easy. It's getting people to actually pay for it. That's the trick. And that's still our biggest challenge is, you know, most people expect to get weather for free. You know, we sort of found initially we thought our niche was going to be yacht racing, and we're still, you know, quite big in yacht racing, but the biggest market for us now is yacht cruising. And that's, you know, people going offshore with their families and keeping them safe is the big thing. A lot of people they haven't been offshore. You know, you've got two sorts of categories. You've got people, half our customers are quite experienced. The other half are just seen the dream on YouTube and they really haven't done a lot of sailing. So the weather is such a big thing for keeping them safe. Yeah.
It is. And having been a sailor who has sailed with very little weather information and now with a whole lot more weather information, it can make a huge difference. I'm curious though, let's talk a little bit about weather forecasting, because I mean, Predict Wind shows you the models and will help with planning departure and planning routing, but you know, you can still get yourself into trouble. You still have to read it. Do you ever worry that people say, oh, I've got this tool now, I can just head out there blithely, and they don't really know how to use it?
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, that is a concern, is that people don't really understand the limitations of weather forecasting. I mean, it's never going to be 100% correct. And so, you know, people do need to, you know, do their homework in that regard. But you know, we have tried with the product to really make it as, you know, I guess our mission is making complex and accurate weather simple and accessible to anyone, anywhere. And so we've really tried to get what is quite a very complex thing and make it really simple and accessible. And so, for example, we have a feature called extreme weather alerts, because we get frustrated with customers who look at an average forecast and say, you know, the forecast was 15 knots, but, you know, we had 30 knots today. I mean, why? Because your forecasts are rubbish, you know. But, you know, they had a rain score come through, you know. Just, I don't understand that there's things like rain scores. So we have, you know, it will look if there's, you know, heavy rain and there's gusts up to over 25 knots, it'll do a little alert in your forecast table or in the weather route or departure plan to show there's a potential for that. Or, you know, or there might be, you know, alert for, you know, thunderstorms with high cape, and also, you know, things like wind against current. So I mean, all those things we know as experienced sailors, we tried to create an alert within Predict Wind to sort of notify people of the potential for these events.
And it's getting better and better, but it's still, like you said, it's never 100% accurate. And each location has its own particular phenomenon. What kind of changes have you seen in the past decade plus in terms of forecasting? I mean, I look at some of the forecasts now, especially 1 to 2 days out, and it's phenomenal, the accuracy.
Tell me about some
of the changes, changes you see coming down the road.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for sure, the actual models themselves have got better and better. So these are the algorithms that we use. And so how a weather model works is it takes the observations from around the world, and this is mainly satellite data, aircraft data, land-based station data, and there's different organizations around the world, NOAA in the US, I mean, the ECMWF, in Europe, create these observation files that we feed into the model. So we feed that into the Predict Wind model, and we run that globally at 50 kilometer resolution. So you imagine the whole world into 50 kilometer cubes. Then we downscale that. So we basically run it down to 8 kilometer resolution for most of the coastlines of the world, and then down to 1 kilometer resolution for popular areas. And so 1 kilometer resolution.
What does that mean? What does that mean, downscaling? Because you're getting the models at a particular resolution. How can you get, it's like, I imagine that is taking a pixelated picture and trying to make it clearer. How do you make it smaller resolution?
Yeah, so basically you just imagine Lego blocks at 8 kilometer resolution. It's an 8 kilometer by 8 kilometer square area, and that is the, I guess, the grid of the computation of the model. And so each of those cubes have you know, associated wind speed and direction and temperature and pressure and all that sort of thing. And that'll affect the adjacent parts of that computational mesh. So we'll have a very complicated physical equations, Navier-Stokes equations, to figure out how that's going to affect the whole Earth. So as you get down to more resolution, you get more accuracy because you're actually modeling the land, the topography. So you can see funneling effects down valleys. You can see heating effects, you know, like a sea breeze form, and you see the sea breezes form.
Are you guys doing your own modeling based off of the modeling you're getting?
Yes. Yeah, so we actually run our own weather model, which we run the model from CSIRO. It's a massive job. So we have 520 domains around the world, you know, high resolution domains, and that's running 24 hours a day, basically, you know, cranking out these forecasts. So getting back to your original question.
How much compute power is it? I mean, it's got to be, I mean, I know there are supercomputers used in weather forecasting because it's so compute intense.
Yes, so we use Amazon Web Services. In fact, to give you a bit of trivia here, when we first started the business, Amazon wasn't around. So we actually, you know, part of the risk taking I took is I went and bought, I think it was about $140,000 worth of servers and hosted it in the States. I think I sold it 3 years later for $10,000. And we didn't have enough computing power to run the models all at once for the whole world. So what we do is we break the thing down to four regions. So we'd run region 1, 2, 3, and 4. And we just try and get the forecast out sort of hopefully before you wake up in the morning, you know, or maybe a little bit later, depending where you lived. But now with Amazon, we can literally spin up as many servers as we want at one time, and we just pay for the time we use them. So the model is it actually runs for 2 hours, and we shut them down and we run it again for 2 hours later in the day. So we run it twice a day. We're the first ones to come up with a 1 kilometer resolution model. You know, literally when we produced this thing, we had customers say, you're making this stuff up. This is just, how can you get 1 kilometer resolution? And now, you know, I mean, ECMWF, we decided to buy that data. They run the whole world at 9 kilometer resolution. So the computing power is just incredible what they're doing. And they're talking about going down to 3 or 4 kilometer resolution for the whole world. We started off with just our models, and then we had the American model, the GFS model. We added the European model, which we spent a lot of money for. There's a private company called Spire, and they have the biggest nano satellite network in the world. And that model is actually more accurate than ECMWF offshore. And then we have the UK Met Office model. So, we tried to find the best possible data set you can have. And this is very much along the lines of what we did in the America's Cup. You'd have, you know, we'd have like 20 models in. And if they all agree, you can have confidence in the forecast. If they're all over the show, the weather's uncertain, you don't really know what's going to happen. And this is what we try to do, predict wind, which is a little bit more complicated because you know, instead of just having one forecast, you've got 6 models, or you might have some more high resolution ones in the States, which is, you'll have 8. And, you know, you're looking at saying, well, what do I need to have, you know, 8 forecasts? Well, the thing is, if they all line up pretty closely, you can have more confidence in the forecast. And that gives you real, you know, real good certainty for what's happening the next day.
I want to look forward a little bit. Is there a limit, do you think, eventually to how well we'll be able to forecast in the future? Or is it just add more compute power until we get there?
I think it's the nature of the human spirit, right? We always wanted to improve. So there'll always be incremental improvements. I mean, one of the things we're looking at now is an AI model, which is Google's produced. And so we're, you know, looking at that and to see, we want to run that model and actually see how that compares with our existing models.
Yeah, I saw the news stories about that and saying that they were able to meet the accuracy or exceed of some of the existing models.
Exactly. So the ECMWF model from Europe is considered the number one model from a national weather center. And they're saying they're beating that model with this new AI model. So we're looking into that. We're looking to see if we can run that model and if we can improve upon that as well, because you can tune that model as well. So yeah, it's a pretty exciting times. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities there of improving things. I mean, it's never going to be 100% correct, But, you know, if you keep improving things incrementally each year, it's just going to get better and better.
And more near term, what are you excited about? I just got an email about Predict Current, a new tool from Predict Wind. Talk to us about what's on the near horizon.
Predict Wind has been, you know, focused on the atmosphere and the wind is kind of our kind of, you know, claim to fame. But yeah, we've been working with some oceanographers here in New Zealand and for the last 3 years, and have a model, very accurate model for tidal currents. So this is you know, world first in terms of coverage. We have 90% of the world's coastlines covered by this model. You know, we have different resolutions. We got up to, at 400 meter resolution, we got to 90 k's of the coastline. And up to 600 k's, we get to 4 kilometer resolution. You know, very complex areas, like, you know, around Seattle, Vancouver, for example, we have 100 meter resolution. And in San Francisco Bay, we have 100 meter resolution.
Wow.
And so that, at 100 meter resolution, you really can see, you know, things like eddies and, you know, accelerations down, you know, through the Golden Gate.
I mean, that is key, having sailed a lot in San Francisco Bay. I mean, there are so many countercurrents and eddies, and, you know, the most accurate thing to do to date has been just watch the fishermen and know, because they're using fuel and they're going to go where they know they need to go. But that's astounding. How is that data collected? Is it satellite?
No. It's again, just like an atmospheric model. It's a numerical model for current. So, you know, the moon has a pull on the US oceans, and that creates a sort of a tidal flow towards the coastlines. I mean, you don't notice it out in the open ocean because it's just this big mass of water. But when you get near the coastlines, and especially around, say, San Francisco, you know, the water running in and out with the tides. And so we're modeling that, you know, down with a very fine mesh to figure out exactly how the current's going to be.
How does the contour, the topography, bottom topography play into that? You know, you've got a narrowing and a speeding up of the current, or?
Totally, yes. It's got all the bathymetry in there. So it's basically a three-dimensional model in the water.
Wow.
And that's our calculation. So we, you know, we run, the beauty of the tidal thing is we can run it out for 50 years. So we've actually got all the tidal constituents out for the next 50 years. So we have the data for the next 50 years. It doesn't have the effect of the wind, because they're obviously in big storms, you can get, you know, the acceleration of the current due to, you know, the wind effect as well. It doesn't take into account of that, but the dominant thing is the tidal, you know, rise and fall.
And then I imagine the next horizon would be the wind and the tide interacting. I mean, as we talked about, you know, current against wind can be dangerous. And
totally. Yes. I mean, we don't have that in Predict Wind per se, but we're going to launch a new app early next year, which will have a dashboard. So you set up your location, say, for example, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, and it'll show you on the dashboard, you know, the rise and fall of the tide. It'll show you the wind. It'll show you the current, obviously. And then also have these red arrows when the wind is against current, because obviously that gives you, you know, very dangerous conditions. But, you know, most importantly is the map of the whole, you know, the whole bay, and you can see the tides going in and out. If you go into, you set up a location now in Predict Wind and on the app, you can actually see a menu called Currents Map, and that'll show you the, you know, the tidal currents going in and out of San Francisco Bay.
I'm going to have to play with that some more. That's exciting. I've been really just delving in, and as we're recording this, we just finished up our very first passage as a family for an extended trip we're making aboard our 35-foot sailboat. And, you know, Predict Wind has really been invaluable in terms of planning when we were leaving and looking forward to seeing when we're going to make our next hop. And as you said, for us, it's about safety. I wanted to have a really easy trip down the coast to introduce my two young girls to cruising in a very calm way. So we ended up doing more motoring than sailing, but that was the intent, and Predict Wind allowed us to do that. I mean, I'm not trying to promote the product here, but I'm just, as a user, I have to say that I'm very impressed.
Well, that's the great thing with the tidal currents now. It's, it's integrated in with our weather routings. So you know, you're doing a coastal trip, you know, you've obviously used the product, but it's like Google Maps. You know, you put in your start point, you put in your destination, and the product puts in a computational mesh over that whole area and calculates, using the performance of your boat polar, the fastest way to get there. But it'll take into account, you know, all the different weather models we have, the wave state, and also the currents. The currents can be very strong coming out of the bay, and if you leave at the wrong time, you know, it's going to take a long time. If you've got a headwind and you're beating out through the underneath the Golden Gate Bridge, you're not going to go very fast on most boats against the current, you know. So you can run departure planning, and it'll tell you, give you option of what day to leave or what hour to leave, and calculate the time. So yeah, all these tools make it just so much easier than trying to sort of do it in your head, that's for sure.
John, how do you find yourself using Predict when most these days? What kind of sailing are you doing?
I've got two daughters as well, and they're both, you know, the family joke was, growing up, you can do any sport you want. You can do sailing. So they grew up through the traditional pathways of Optimist and P-Class and Starlings and 29ers. But they're both now into foiling. So one of them's doing the Olympic class IQ foil, which is the windsurfing foiling, and the other one's doing the Olympic class, which is the kite foiling. And so we, you know, I raced my older daughter in the kite foiling for a little while, and then she started to beat me. So then I changed over to windsurfing, the wind IQ foil, and beat her for a while. But now she's starting to beat me, so you're going to have to change sport again.
You're not a competitive family at all, are you?
No, not at all. So we all do winging, which is a kind of a fun thing we all do together as a family, including Trace, my wife. And
That's one of the things I'm looking forward to most about this trip, is trying to get into winging.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Yeah, it's great. It's awesome.
It's just taken over on San Francisco Bay. What used to be full of kiteboarders and windsurfers is now almost exclusively winging.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy. It's so accessible. It's a lot safer than kiting, that's for sure. Yeah, it's great. And it's great on a boat too. I mean, you can just store the kit on the boat a lot easier, and you can do it in an offshore breeze. It's gusty. And
well, that was my thinking. I mean, that even the boards, you can get inflatable boards that aren't too bad. And
exactly.
You know, collapse it all down. So, John, what haven't we talked about that you'd want to mention?
One of the features that we're quite proud about in the weather routing is the hydrodynamic modeling of the boat. Again, I think it's a world first. So when people quite often, you know, do a weather route or do their passage, you know, they're really obsessed by the wind, and rightly so. Obviously the wind's very, very important, but generally it's not the wind that will get you, it's the wave state. I mean, you can be in the harbor, or, you know, in a bay, and it can be blowing 40 knots, and you'd be fine. It's flat water. It's not really too much of a problem. But you're out in 40 knots in a really confused wave state, and that can be a real problem. And so we have developed this tool, which is quite unique in terms of it models catamarans and monohulls in any wave state possible. You put in the dimensions for your boat, so it's specific to your boat. So you put in the waterline length, the beam, the draft, and the displacement, and it literally model the boat for key metrics like roll, so how much your boat's going to roll, the vertical acceleration, which is related to seasickness. You can make anyone seasick if you have enough vertical acceleration. They've proven that in the Navy. And then boat slamming, how much the boat's going to slam. So it's great when you do the weather routing and you can see those metrics, and you can see if you're below the safe tolerances for all those things. And it really is. I mean, I did a trip recently from Auckland here, New Zealand, to Fiji. One of our team members is a professional delivery captain. Yeah, nice boat. It was a, you know, 70-foot Beneteau. But, yeah, we had the swell was big. It was like 4-meter swells. I mean, it was behind us most of the way. So we, you know, knew it was going to be good. But and we ran it through the weather routing, and the weather routing says, yeah, it should be below the safe tolerances for roll and vertical acceleration and no slamming, because we're obviously going downwind. And, yeah, sure enough, it was great. Great trip.
But that's very cool.
Yeah, and you get a long period swell, and it's, you're out there, and you know, you can see these swells, but it's no problem. It's when they're obviously when they're close together, and it's maybe confused state, or certainly if it's forward of the beam, that's when you have the problem. And And it just tells you how your boat's going to cope in those situations.
And it's nice to have that security and nice to know. John, thank you so much. This has been amazing. I really appreciate you taking the time, talking to us a little bit about PredictWin. Excited to see how the tool continues to develop.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Ben.
That's it for this week's show. You can check out the free version of PredictWin or sign up for a subscription at predictwin.com. I'm your host, Ben Shaw. You can find me on Instagram at outthegatesailing or email me at outthegatesailing@gmail.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. And until next time, smooth sailing.